Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to today's call. We're going to be talking today at Hormones Community Calls about mastering PCOS. Happy New Year to everybody. This is the first call of the year, and I can't get, I'm just so excited to get started again. And I say this because I was away for the entire month of December. My boyfriend and I went traveling around Morocco, so a pretty exotic location. I have to say it's absolutely wonderful to get away for that entire month, to have the luxury of doing so for sure, but it does take a while to get back into the groove. Certainly my body has been very thankful for taking the time off and just being away from everything, and it's great for the adrenals, and it's great just to kind of offload everything off your brain, and I feel like I'm a real good sponge now for absorbing new stuff and learning and just delivering amazing content and programs this coming year. So I just want to tell you that Morocco has been an amazing experience in terms of the food. There's going to be so many recipes I'm going to be creating that's inspired by the Moroccan cuisine, the spices, and just the way that things are prepared, such a wholesome way. And one of the things I want to share with you is that people eat a really, really clean diet. I mean, there's just, you know, the processed foods have not really penetrated the country that much yet, especially in the remote places. And it's just a delight to see people being healthy and slim and having beautiful skin, and the women have beautiful teeth and just look wonderful. And it's just a great reminder how real food can play an incredibly big role in how we look and how we feel. Most certainly the highlight for us was living with the nomads in the North Sahara. Those are the Berber nomads, and we were together making pretty much before every meal we would make livers that were cut up to pieces that were wrapped in fat, put on skewers, and put on the grill. And that was started before every tagine, which is like it was the main meal for the day. So that's going to be one of the recipes I would have to replicate. And, you know, one of the biggest realizations of that trip was just the fact that we can be so happy with so little. And looking at the life of a nomad who really they have so little, and yet the kids are happy and they're smiling and running around and they don't have computer games. And I haven't seen so much of happiness and joy in a long time with so little material possessions. And so that was a really great reminder for me, and also a question of how much really do I need more in my life in order to be happy. So I wanted to share that with you. Before I get started with our lovely guest today, I just want to make a quick announcement that on the 14th of January, I'm going to be hosting a free workshop called Mastering Hashimoto's, and it's going to be an hour and a half workshop where you get to do the work together with me on uncovering what are the root causes of your Hashimoto's, which, as you know, is an autoimmune condition. So it's not a straightforward condition, and everybody has a little different set of triggers. So we're going to be diving very, very deep into the variety of different causes, because once you know the cause, then you know what could be your call to action and your path to healing. All right, so let me get started with my guest for tonight, who's Emmy. And let me just read the bio for you so everybody is a little bit more in tune with who Emmy is. Emmy Madling is the founder of PCOSDiva.com, which is an amazing online resource for women with PCOS, which embraces a holistic approach to healing and thriving. PCOS Diva has worked, and Emmy has worked with thousands of women, teaching them how to make sustainable lifestyle changes, which in turn positively impact their health and lessen PCOS symptoms. The PCOS divas are able to take back control of their bodies and regain their fertility, femininity, health, and happiness. And for more about PCOS Diva, Amy's philosophy, and the PCOS Diva programs, you can check out the About section on her great website, which, of course, is PCOSDiva.com. Hey, Amy, welcome to the community call tonight.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me, Magdalena. I'm thrilled to be here, and I can't wait to try some of your Moroccan-inspired recipes. It sounds like it's going to be fabulous.
You know, I'm really excited to develop them because they're really quite simple, you know, and just the use of spices just happen to be so much in line with you know, with just hormonal balancing, using of cumin, a lot of pomegranate, lots of turmeric in their recipe. So I got a whole bunch of not just food, I forgot to tell you, but also wanted to mention, like, even soaps. They have something called a black soap, which is just so natural, and they use mud to wash their hair. And so I was just running around like a crazy woman around the markets. They call it the zooks, and then just picking up, you know, whatever I could just to bring it in here. And, I mean, isn't it wonderful to be able to wash your hair with mud? You know, zero chemicals, and your hair just looks absolutely amazing. So those are some of the things that will be sharing.
None of the parabens or phthalates to disrupt our endocrine system.
Yeah, and, you know, at a fraction of the cost, really, because, you know, even like those really, really clean products, I mean, you're talking about $30 to $40 a bottle, and, you know, not everybody can afford that, right? We all know that, so... All right, Amy, you know, I would love to start the call with really hearing your story, because like every coach, really successful coach, I think most of us have come from a place of having experienced something pretty traumatic or dramatic ourselves. And so I would love to hear your story.
Sure, yeah. PCOS, or if you haven't heard the term PCOS, it stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it's one of the most common endocrine disorders found in women. It affects, the number that you hear most often is 10% of women worldwide, but I think that number is kind of inching up to possibly as much as 20%. And less than 70% of women have that diagnosis. And I know it took me till I was age 30 to get diagnosed with PCOS, but I knew at a much younger age that something wasn't quite right when I was probably age 14, you know, kind of going through puberty. I had absent menstrual cycles, a lot of early signs of insulin resistance, which is a main component of PCOS, and the doctors didn't really recognize that because I was on the thin side, and I think that's one of the issues that a lot of women have getting a diagnosis, is that PCOS is a syndrome, and it really doesn't manifest itself the same way in every woman. And although many women are overweight with PCOS, but there are also a lot of thin women that have PCOS as well. And PCOS is also the leading cause of infertility. So as I entered my 20s and got married and started wanting to start a family, fertility became a real issue for me. And that's when I was diagnosed, going through the whole fertility treatment routine. And I ended up getting pregnant with Clomid and some injectables with my second child. But I just, through my 20s and early 30s, I just did not feel well. A lot of women with PCOS complain of fatigue and irritability and depression. Women also often have acne and hair loss and hair growth where you don't want it. And I was experiencing all of those symptoms. And one of the main forms of treatment for women, or options, if you go to your mainstream medical doctor, they would give you a prescription for the diabetic drug metformin, which is kind of off-label for PCOS, and as well as possibly the birth control pill to help regulate periods and kind of it ends up masking symptoms, but sort of keeps hormones in check, especially testosterone. And so I was given metformin, and I couldn't tolerate it. It made me a lot of gastrointestinal distress, and that's a common side effect of metformin. So after I had my two boys, I decided that I just could not put myself through metformin again, and there had to be a better way, that this couldn't be the only option to manage PCOS, which is, there is no cure, so it's a syndrome that has to be managed over the course of a lifetime. And I felt at age 32, way too young to feel so old. And that's what really started my journey towards healing and looking for a holistic approach to managing PCOS.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things you mentioned is insulin resistance, and you said you had probably the symptoms of insulin resistance at a very early age. Could you talk a little bit about that? Like, what are the typical symptoms of insulin resistance?
Well, one of, like, a telltale sign is probably that abdominal fat, you know, kind of where your fat is distributed. So, you know, although I was thin, I had that little, you know, kind of spare tire, that little belly, which is kind of a sign of insulin resistance. I also had a lot of hypoglycemia, especially now as I look back after a high carbohydrate meal. For instance, I used to love to go for, like, Sunday breakfast, orange juice, French toast with maple syrup, and several hours later, I remember going to Mass and on a Sunday, and then feeling very faint and actually passing out a couple times because my blood sugar had plummeted. So that's, you know, that hypoglycemia is a real sign that you're not processing your sugar very well. And yeah, I think also, too, you know, the fatigue after a high carbohydrate meal, you know, as a sign that your body's just not processing the sugar very well.
Did you experience that kind of a hunger? Like, even after eating, you're still feeling hungry? Did you have that as well?
Yeah. It's interesting that you should mention that. I used to think that I had compulsive eating problems because I think once you start with the carbohydrates, and you don't have any protein. And at that time, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, you know, I fashioned myself as a vegetarian, but it was more of a bagel eating, you know, really limited protein vegetarian. That I've 43, so I kind of grew up in that, I like to call it the snack well, fat-free era, where fat was demonized. So, you know, lots of fat-free bagels, fat-free frozen yogurt. I couldn't stop eating it because it was just kind of triggering that, you know, carbohydrate, sugar response that needed more and more sugar. And a lot of women with PCOS do suffer with eating disorders. And I remember thinking that I'm such a smart woman. You know, I have all of these areas in my life under control. Why can I not control the eating? And so it wasn't until I started really balancing my diet with more healthy fat, lots more healthy fat, lots more, you know, high-quality, clean protein, that those cravings really subsided, and I felt so much more in control of food and my diet.
Mm. Yeah, that's so interesting you say this, you know, because that's one of the things that I think it's very apparent to me as a non-American, you know, but as a European or even traveling, you know, just coming back from Morocco, I mean, people eat so much of fat, and there is an abundance of meat and fairly little carbohydrates, you know, and they don't snack. And so there's an interesting relationship with food where I feel like Europeans, for example, you know, really cherish food, and there's, you know, and the food is, sometimes, I mean, in France, everything is just soaked in butter, and the Italians, you know, are married to the olive oil, and people don't have, you know, but people just love and cherish food, and they don't really snack in between. That's the interesting, the phenomena, where I feel like in the U.S., when I first got here, I felt like people were afraid of food rather than loving it and cherishing it, and like what you were talking about, it's like it just brings up these stories after stories you hear from people of like feeling so much guilt for eating badly, where it's actually the food is causing this. It's not that you have a bad relationship with food, or it's not your fault. It's really just about, it's a physiological response. It's nothing to do with willpower, right?
Yeah, and I think we also are not nourishing ourselves with real whole food. You know, although fast food is, you know, I think engineered in a lab to taste good and to kind of have an addictive quality, but it really doesn't nourish our body at any level so that we really truly feel satisfied. You know, it's really designed to want more and more, and then that brings that guilt and that, I call it, in my program, I call it the 3 Ds, diet, deprivation, and denial. We get sort of into this crazy cycle where we really do need to take, a lesson from the Europeans and really understand that we need to find that true pleasure in food and allow ourselves to experience a pure pleasure from eating something truly delectable and delicious, and even if it's, you know, sometimes indulgent, but to
absolutely
be mindful. And so I love absolutely. I love that's what you experienced on your trip.
Yeah, and you know, and just being European, right? So that's, you know, that's a huge difference. I mean, you go to Europe, people just really, you know, indulge in food and in a good way. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to go back to PCOS, and you know, I know some listeners already know that they have PCOS. There might be others who are suspecting they have it, but they don't really. They've been told that they don't, right? So let's talk a little bit about the main symptoms of PCOS. What are we looking for?
So women with PCOS wrestle with an array of possible symptoms, and it really is possible symptoms. Like I said, it PCOS doesn't manifest itself in the same way with every woman. There's, I just did a great podcast with a wonderful PCOS-focused doctor. His name's Dr. Mark Perlow, and he was mentioning that there's 108 different genes that PCOS affects. So, and there's thousands of different combinations of PCOS symptoms that you could have. So you'd be looking at certainly insulin resistance, resistant weight loss. You know, there's issues with leptin with women with PCOS, irregular menstrual cycles, infertility, depression, anxiety, acne, hair loss. I mean, just to name a few. But I think something that women with PCOS need to really realize, and you know, doctors as well, PCOS isn't just a fertility issue. It isn't something that once a woman enters perimenopause or menopause, PCOS goes away. There's really far-reaching health implications as we age, women with PCOS, such as increased risk of cardiovascular disease and diabetes and certain cancers like endometrial cancer. So it can make having PCOS more stressful and even more daunting. But I'm here to tell you really good news, and that there's a lot of hope. While you cannot cure PCOS, you really can render it almost inactive by, I believe, the right lifestyle. And I've been able to do that for myself and, you know, many, many of my clients.
Awesome. And you look fabulous. I mean, we met at an event. That's how we met, right? And you look absolutely gorgeous and stunning. And who would ever have thought that you had, you know, PCOS?
Oh, you're really sweet.
You definitely are the walking example of what you're preaching. So one of the big things, I think, is the matter of diagnosis. You know, I realize today that PCOS is much is underdiagnosed and misdiagnosed as thyroid conditions are, which I'm sure you're very familiar with that, how many women have thyroid conditions and flying under the radar because of really poor testing ranges, as well as not incomplete set of tests that are run for thyroid conditions. And it's becoming pretty apparent to me that it's a similar story with PCOS. So if somebody, whoever is listening, people who are listening to the show and go like, oh, yep, that's me, yep, I've got that hair coming out, you know, growing right above my lips, and I've got hair loss and depression, and I can't get pregnant for the past 5 years. What are your recommended tests that we should be running or asking a doctor to run in order to get a proper diagnosis?
Yeah, I'll be happy to tell you about diagnosis criteria, but I just did want to mention, I know that you had mentioned about your Mastering Hashimoto's program, and women with PCOS are actually at much elevated risk of autoimmune disease, and Hashimoto's, in fact, 27% of women were found in a certain study to have elevated thyroid-specific antibodies. And 47% have ultrasound images that are typical for women with Hashimoto's. So that is something that you need to push if you have PCOS to make sure you have a thorough thyroid panel lab and ask to be tested for those thyroid antibodies. And if you do have Hashimoto's, gosh, your program sounds wonderful, and I would love to tune in. It's not something, I don't struggle with Hashimoto's, so it's something that I really need to learn more of so I can help my clients. And hypothyroidism as well is an issue for women with PCOS. But so diagnosis is now largely based upon what's dubbed as the Rotterdam criteria,
mm-hmm.
and these criteria also they include the criteria from the National Institutes of Health and the Androgen Excess and PCOS Society. So to be diagnosed with PCOS, a woman must have two out of the three of the following criteria. So number one would be ovarian dysfunction, including lack of ovulation or less frequent ovulation. Number two would be high levels of androgens, including DHEA, testosterone. And then number three would be polycystic ovaries. So PCOS really becomes kind of a misnomer, and I know that there's an effort.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to make that clear to everybody. So the third one, is that something you get done through an ultrasound with a doctor? Is that correct?
Yes, correct. A vaginal ultrasound, right. So actually, 70% of women with PCOS have been shown to have polycystic ovaries, but there is that 30% that do not. So it's important to know that if you do go to your doctor and you do have irregular menstrual cycles and you have elevated testosterone, but you do not have polycystic ovaries, then you still would have that diagnosis according to the Rotterdam criteria of PCOS.
So that's interesting what you're saying, because I thought when you said three criteria, I thought that one of them was going to be insulin resistance or any form of sugar issues or hypoglycemia. So obviously that's not one of them.
No, and not with the diagnosis criteria at this time, correct.
Okay.
And the other thing, too, that is interesting to note, that approximately 20% of women who do not have PCOS have cysts on their ovaries. So if you have cysts on your ovaries, but your cycles are regular and your testosterone is regular, then you don't have PCOS.
Okay.
According to this criteria. Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on that criteria?
Well, I mean, I think that certainly the insulin resistance and the metabolic factors should, I believe, come into play. And I think that things are shifting because they had National Institute of Health workshop in 2012, and that's when they, or 2013, and they decided that there needs to be a name change to reflect the metabolic nature of the syndrome. So I think that things are moving in that direction.
Okay.
Certainly.
Okay. So
because you can have
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, because you could be thin, like have the thin sort of form of PCOS, and still have insulin resistance.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so it sounds like the Rotterdam diagnostic tools have got these three criteria, but from a practical perspective or from like a holistic health perspective, we do want to take a look at the insulin resistance. That definitely would put up a red flag or a yellow flag for us, right?
Right. So, you know, you'd want to be looking at, you know, a hemoglobin A1C test.
Yeah.
And fasting glucose, and then looking at that fasting glucose to insulin ratio, ratio of less than 4 to 5 indicates insulin resistance. So, you know, you really want to have those tests done to get a better assessment. And some other labs that I think are important, and I actually, to make this kind of a helpful tool for women with PCOS, I put together a guide. It's a 32-page guide. It's I call it PCOS 101, Your Guide to Health and Hope, and it is really a great tool. I call it kind of a tool in order for you to be a diva at your doctor. I think it's important for women with PCOS to be able to be knowledgeable about the syndrome, and to be able to advocate for themselves in the doctor's office, and knowing what labs to ask for. And it doesn't mean that the doctor will run all of them, but certainly know what should be considered and how to interpret those labs, or at least know the normal ranges is important. So I've included all of that in the guide, and you can find that at PCOSdiva.com/hope. But as we mentioned, certainly you need to have your thyroid checked, because so many women with PCOS have hypothyroid. And vitamin D is really an important nutrient to check. So many women with PCOS are low in vitamin D, and that can really cause a lot of hormonal metabolic issues. And another test that I think is really important, especially if you're on the drug metformin that we talked about earlier, is vitamin B12, because metformin depletes B12. And a lot of doctors have their patients on metformin and are not telling their patients to supplement with B12. And I really prefer a methylated B12.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's an important... Yeah, and it's an important nutrient to be supplementing and to check for, because if your values are really low, that can cause problems with infertility and lots of other, body processes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned androgens, right, so DHEA, testosterone. How do you like your clients to get tested for those? Blood, urine, saliva?
It's so hard, because most people have access to, you know, your standard
blood test.
Family practitioner who is only going to do the blood serum. But certainly, I like hormone saliva panel. I think that if you can find a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor that could do a Spectracell hormone panel, that can be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with Labrix, they provide fantastic tools for saliva. It's not very expensive, and that includes all the cortisols as well, estrogens, all the three estrogens, progesterone, and the ratios. And so that's, I see so many of my clients coming back with normal estrogen, normal progesterone through blood, and then when we run through saliva testing, it's a very different story, and that's the truth comes out. And it's done, for people who are maybe listening for the first time, so I do talk a lot about testing in the past. The difference mainly is through serum, which is blood, you get the total values, the means bound and unbound whereby in saliva and urine you get to see the free, that means that what your body can actually utilize. And so, you know, something that was really a shocker to me when I first started doing this work is that they actually provide you with a free testosterone number on the blood, on your blood work, but it's an estimated number, and I think they take like 30% of your total testosterone, and they say, well, 30% of that is free, but the 30% is just an estimate. It's not the real figure for a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you mentioned two other hormones that are really important for women with PCOS to be tested is estrogen and progesterone. And, you know, mm-hmm. most women with PCOS are estrogen dominant, and that can cause a lot of issues. And, you know, that low progesterone really can cause a lot of the PCOS symptoms. So it's important to look at that total kind of hormonal picture for a woman with PCOS.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Amy, you know, one of the big focuses of my calls is really solutions and self-help. And so let's talk a little bit about solutions. And so walk us through, how do you work with, I know everybody's different, everybody has got different triggers, and like you said, the symptoms are so varied. But I'm sure you have a protocol, and I would love to hear a little bit more from you about your protocol that really helps women.
So PCOS is a real inflammatory state. You know, women have a lot of inflammation. So the first thing that's so important is to really look at your diet and remove those inflammatory triggers. So I find that gluten is like a major issue for women with PCOS and is the first thing that I would like to see women remove from their diets. So gluten and dairy, you know, two really inflammatory foods for a lot of people, and certainly processed soy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, start eating a whole food-based product diet. And you know what that means? It means that you really have to start getting into your kitchen, and I call it sizzling in the kitchen, Divas Sizzle in the Kitchen, and getting in the kitchen and cooking real food, and, you know, stop relying on the packaged processed foods and the fast foods. It's really as simple as that. Just start cooking real food, and healthy food doesn't have to taste bad. It can taste really delicious, and I know that's one of your specialties, Magdalena. And I think once women with PCOS can understand how good they can feel eating clean, gluten-free, dairy-free food, you're just not going to go back, because, you know, I like to tell my clients that, and it's so true, nothing tastes as good as feeling good feels.
Yeah.
So cooking real whole food is, you know, a number one, I think. Eating lots of greens and trying to integrate as much organic as you can. Certainly, avoiding that you know, the Dirty Dozen, and integrating integrating more clean animal products, you know, organic butter, organic meats. I think it's just really important to reduce your toxic load. Avoiding endocrine disrupting chemicals is huge, and it's something that I think doctors aren't talking about enough. That reducing that toxic load is really important for women with PCOS. We have higher levels of BPA in our system than non-PCOS women. So kind of getting rid of the canned vegetables and canned tomatoes that are in BPA-lined cans is important. And the right type of exercise. A lot of women with PCOS are killing themselves at the gym doing chronic cardio, and that's actually making things worse for them. It's burning out their adrenals. It's increasing cortisol. Where women with PCOS should really be focusing on building muscle to help with the insulin resistance. And I am a big fan of yoga to help reduce cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
Cortisol really wreaks havoc on PCOS and hormonal balance, which I'm sure you've talked about before, Magdalena.
Yeah.
So
a lot of time
for women, and you know that when cortisol is elevated in our bodies, it elevates insulin, reduces, it steals from progesterone, so it's kind of making an already bad situation worse. Learning how to manage your stress is really important part of living like a diva. And I think a lot of that comes down to practicing extreme self-care and taking time for yourself. And I think that's the reason that I ended up coming up with sort of this concept of PCOS Diva, because when I started healing myself and adopting this new way of living, my husband said, gosh, you're really becoming a diva, because I was advocating for myself, like in a restaurant, making sure I could get exactly what I wanted to eat, or making sure that I had time to exercise or had time to go take a bath to relax. And really that's what it takes to be able to heal our bodies and kind of regain control of our lives.
Is that how the name PCOS Diva came about? It's from your husband's comment?
Yes. And I thought, you know, you're exactly right. That's what it takes.
I love it. Absolutely. So what's your typical breakfast, Amy?
It was 10 degrees this morning here in New Hampshire, and I was still sipping my smoothie. I think that a protein smoothie is with lots of greens. It's, you know, a lot of women don't want to have veggies in the morning, but I think starting your day off with vegetables, like blended up in a smoothie, just gives you that energy and lifts your mood. A lot of women have sort of that heavy kind of mood, and I think that greens kind of give you that light energy.
What did you put in your smoothie today? That's funny, because I had a smoothie this morning as well, which I normally don't do this every day. I kind of vary my breakfast. But what did you put in your smoothie today?
So I start with unsweetened coconut milk. And I have a protein powder coming out soon that I use. I use a vegan protein powder, rice or hemp protein. But this protein is derived from beef, and it's like a non-whey beef-based protein, which my body really likes. I think it's really hard for women with PCOS to be vegan. That's just been my experience coaching lots of women. I think we need high-quality animal protein to sort of manage the insulin and the hormones and to feel stable. It's not to say that you can't do it, but I just think it's really hard to without overdoing the carbohydrates. But anyway, so the protein... Some kale, I had some Swiss chard, so I threw that in there as well, and some raspberries and organic raspberries and blackberries, and I put some fiber powder to kind of, fiber is really important for women with PCOS. I think it's hard to get fiber. It helps escort the bad estrogen out of our system, helps us to stay full longer. And then I put in some greens powder that has greens like chlorella and spirulina as well. And that just makes me feel really good. So
yeah,
I usually have a smoothie.
Like very green. It doesn't have any sugar in it, huh?
I mean, the sugar from the berries, but berries are really low glycemic. The powder that I use has like 1 gram of sugar. So minimal sugar. Some women with PCOS do better on a more paleo approach with less grains. But myself, I need some gluten-free grains to feel stable. And so some mornings I'll do an oatmeal with like steel-cut oats, and you know, I will put some protein powder in that as well, and some nuts and seeds and cinnamon and lots of like warming spices, vanilla. So that was
awesome.
That's another one of my favorite breakfasts.
All right, can I tell you about my breakfast today?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
You know, I really got into savory kind of smoothies. I know it's kind of counterintuitive because smoothies typically, you know, like the smoothies that we originally know as in bananas and milkshakes kind of a thing, right? More like a dessert thing. So I kind of got to the point of like just making totally savory smoothies. So in today's smoothie, I have spinach. I put in some sauerkraut. I put in chlorella, so I just love that sort of that, you know, that fishy undertone to it. And with flax seeds, I put some camu camu in there for vitamin C, and then being inspired by Morocco, so a teaspoon of cumin, and that gave a really nice flavor to. I think the cumin and sauerkraut just go well so well together, and olive oil. A lot of olive oil, and just blended that up, and that was just absolutely fabulous. I love my savory kind of breakfast. I find,
so
you know,
you
I find
the
my a good breakfast
like
really
the liquid. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, what do you use for like the liquid base?
I added water.
Oh, water. Okay.
I just use water, yeah. I'm not too good with coconut. I tend to do better on low FODMAPs kind of approach. And coconut, apples,
okay.
Onions are not my best friends. And so, you know, in limitation.
Mm-hmm.
And I find just water. Oh, I did put avocado in as well. So there you go. So the avocado gave a really nice, smooth texture. And I find when you put water in it, it's really quite wonderful. And it just doesn't really... You know, a lot of people feel like water is just going to make things so tasteless, and they will put things like almond milk, right, which if it's homemade, it's great, but most of the almond milks I'm personally not a fan because just the amount of additives that's added and preservatives
right.
that are added to the most of the products. And so I just find just putting water just does the job, really. So tell us, you know, another thing I want to ask you, this is a question that we got that came in through an email. The question was about whether it's possible to get off metformin. What is your answer? What's your take on that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned in my story, I was on metformin. A lot of times fertility docs or your OBGYN will give women with PCOS metformin to help them, you know, in the fertility process. It's it's been shown in a lot of studies to help with ovulation, and but as I said, it does like the side effects can be horrible. So, yeah, I mean, I was able to transition off of metformin, and you know, now I control my PCOS without any pharmaceutical drugs, and my labs are all normal. You know, on paper, doesn't look like I have PCOS, but as I mentioned, there is no cure. So if I got off of my lifestyle and started eating, you know, McDonald's and processed food, you know, all those symptoms would come rearing back. But yeah, absolutely. Women that follow my programs, you know, oftentimes transition off of the birth control pill and metformin. A lot of women are looking to manage their PCOS in a more natural way, since it's something that you have to manage over a lifetime, and not everybody wants to, you know, be on pharmaceuticals. And there's side effects too. For the pill, I do want to just make this note, because I think a lot of women don't realize this, that women with PCOS are at elevated risk, higher risk for blood clots if they're on the pill. And a lot of times doctors don't tell you those risks. And I can't tell you how many women I have heard from who have been rushed to the hospital with a life-threatening blood clot. And we're never told that risk. So I do want to let everybody know that on the call.
Yeah, since we're on the birth control pills, I think the other, you know, coming from the thyroid world, one of the, also the other things that doctors don't tell you, and that's by default, is that birth control pills elevate your thyroid binding globulin, which basically means that, as the name implies, the thyroid binding globulin, so that's a protein that binds into a thyroid hormone, and it reduces the availability of thyroid hormone available for the body to utilize. And this is the reason why so many women put on weight, get depressed, is because it is the thyroid that takes a hit, or is the amount of the thyroid, that's a hormone that's available for the body to utilize, takes a hit. Another interesting point that, again, doctors don't tell us about birth control pills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about, this is another question that you you mentioned, you always get that question, and there was also, that was a question that came in the email earlier about supplements. That's something that we, I think it's a very common question, and I just want to preface this, you know, that I'm personally not the biggest fan of supplements. I think they should be used strategically, because I feel like, especially in the United States, supplements are just used like a mainstream way of solving problems. It is a crutch to our health issues rather than be looking, because it's much easier to pop a supplement than it is to get off gluten or to get off, you know, and sign up, go to a yoga class or give up our cheese, right? So, but there is a question. So I would love to hear your take on the supplements. What do you recommend?
Well, I certainly agree with you that there's no magic pill. No amount of supplements are going to outperform a healthy whole food based diet. But coming off of that question about, you know, what can you do to transition off of metformin, there's been some wonderful research done that it's some studies that have showed a lot of great results for inositols. And inositol is a type of B vitamin. There's actually 9 different types of inositol. And there's 2 types. Sure. It's I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. So 2 of the 9 forms of inositol, MYO, which is M-Y-O, and D-Chiro, which is D-C-H-I-R-O, but it's often, you'll see it as DCI, D-chiro-inositol. They have special insulin-sensitizing capabilities, and they're important, kind of like second messengers for insulin receptors.
Yeah.
So MYO and MYO-inositol and D-chiro-inositol can really help women with PCOS with their insulin. And some of the studies are showing that it's as effective as metformin. And so there's been recent studies where they've combined both MYO and D-chiro together into one formula. And there's a product on the market now called Ovacetol, and it's O-V-A-S-I-T-O-L, and this is what I take every day. It's, it comes in like a little packet. It's a, sort of a powder, tasteless kind of powder. You just put it in some water, and I take it in the morning, in the evening. And the myo-inositol, so women with PCOS, they have found that our body has poor conversion of myo-inositol into D-chiro-inositol, so we need more of it. So that is something that you can look into. There's lots of information about both forms of myo-inositol and D-chiro on my site, and as well as this new formulation of ovacetol. So you can check that out. So that's one of the supplements that I really think is very therapeutic for women with PCOS, you know, during those fertility years and beyond too, because it helps improve insulin sensitivity, also helps reduce testosterone. And it helps with egg quality as well. So it's you get a lot of bang for your buck. And then fish oil is something of, you know, omega-3 fish oil with lots of DHA is something that I believe is really important. It helps, again, on many different levels. It helps with insulin resistance. It helps with moods. It's just another healthy fat to kind of balance out your diet.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Fish oil, I think, is really important.
I'm curious if you do work with berberine.
So I have not tried berberine myself, but there's some really nice research coming out about berberine. And, again, that's another herb. Now, myo-inositol D-chio is a nutrient, but berberine is an herb, and that is showing to be as effective as metformin in some recent clinical trials. It helps to lower insulin and glucose in a way similar to metformin, kind of upregulates insulin receptors and stimulates that uptake of glucose into your cells. It also blocks testosterone production. So it can be very helpful as well. There are some precautions for berberine. You should definitely not take it if you're pregnant or breastfeeding, whereas the myo-inositol and that avositol, it's actually, there's been some studies that show that it can be helpful during pregnancy. So it's important on, you know, any of these supplements that you should certainly ask your doctor before taking them. There's, you know, if you're on any blood thinners, fish oil also tends to thin your blood. So it's important that you always ask your doctor before you start taking something. But yes, berberine is, I think that it shows a lot of potential for a PCOS treatment.
Awesome. Amy, tell us, I would love to ask you, where do we find you? How do you work with people? But before we do that, is there anything else that you want to add on to something that we haven't covered yet you think that's really important to share with our listeners?
Well, I think I just want to share that despite what you might be hearing from your doctor, I know I was told that I would have to jump through hoops, or doctors would have to jump through hoops for me to get pregnant one day. I was told that I would never get pregnant. You know, there is a lot of hope, and I have 3 children now, 2 that were born or conceived with some fertility treatments, and then I have a healthy little girl that was, I was 37 when I got pregnant with her after really taking control of my PCOS through lifestyle change. So there's so much hope, especially for women that are struggling with fertility. Most women with PCOS can get pregnant, and I think lifestyle has a huge part to play in that. So I just wanted to really leave with a message of hope for women with PCOS. And there's also, I have a lot of expert interviews on my site from doctors that are leading the way in the research world. So please listen to those, because there's lots of exciting new research happening in the PCOS world.
Yeah, awesome. So tell us, since we're on that, tell us a little bit more about where do we find you and how do you work with people?
So I'm PCOSdiva.com is my site, and I have a program that I run about 5 times a year. It's called the PCOS Diva Discover Your Diva Jumpstart Program. It's really an introduction into this PCOS Diva lifestyle. It's a 7-day live program where it's an online-based group coaching program, and I'm on there and my team. We're answering questions and supporting you through this 7-day process of, you know, working on sizzling in the kitchen and working on finding the right kind of movement that works best for you and shifting your thinking to a more positive approach. And, you know, we're working on lots of other fundamentals to be able to live this lifestyle so you can thrive with PCOS. And I'm enrolling my next program for will start January 19th. So come, you can check it out at PCOSdiva.com. I also have meal plans that I offer for women with PCOS. They're seasonal-based meal plans, and I do private coaching as well, and I am very shortly going to be opening up a PCOS Diva store with some really the supplements that I take every day and the you know, what I'm doing, my smoothie powders and protein bar. And please come join my Facebook community. There's 87,000 women that are, you know, just really approaching PCOS from a more positive
point. That's one of the things I really love about your message, is the sense of hope you're giving people, and that's just so important, because there's so many, it's so easy just to focus on all the things that aren't working, the broken medical system and the screwed up food that we have widely available in the country and blah, blah, blah. And so it can be quite depressing, but you always come from a place of really uplifting and someone, and so that's really, really awesome. So that's one of the reasons why I just really, really wanted to have you on the show.
Thank
you. And also
you
mentioned that PCOSdiva.com/hope to get the 101 on PCOS, right?
The 101 guide, yes.
Yeah,
it's please do that. Please download that. It's very helpful, and it's really going to help you be a diva at the doctor and advocate for yourself and get the care that you need and deserve.
Awesome. And you've got Jumpstart starting in January 19th, did you say?
January 19th, yes. And the enrollment ends on the 14th. So
it's only $97, right, to join?
Yes. Yep,
that's
$97. It's right. And there, and then the great thing, too, is once you become a Jumpstart alumni, you can join our Facebook Jumpstart alumni group page. And there's over 500 active women on that site. So if you're looking for a community of like-minded women that are supporting each other, that's the place to be. So that's a huge benefit of doing the program as well. You do get ongoing support from a wonderful community of women.
Awesome. Amy, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you on the call. A lot of really great information, and just really very uplifting and giving people hope. And so that's really what I like to do on this show. I want to thank you so much for, I know it's late on the East Coast, and you've got a family of three. I don't know how you do all of this, by the way, as a mom of three, and you're just always online. You've got so much stuff going on. That's quite amazing. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. It was truly a pleasure. You're doing some wonderful work yourself, Magdalena. I love your recipes.
Thank you, Amy. All right, everybody, check out Amy's Jumpstart program on PCOSdiva.com. And for those of you who are struggling with Hashimoto's, don't forget about the January 14th workshop. And the sign-up is on MasteringHashimoto's.com. And it's going to be an hour and a half workshop where we both get to do the work. Good night, everybody, and have a wonderful week ahead. Bye.